This is number 0017, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there. Yes, indeed, this is Peter Anthony Holder with another edition of the Stuff File program. This one, number 0017. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Andrew Fazekas, the Night Sky Guy, talks about the Star of Bethlehem. Scientifically, what could it be?
It seems like there was a very, very strikingly close conjunction, pairing of Venus and Jupiter on June 17th, 2 BC. So this is a strong candidate for the Christmas star, many astronomers are saying, because these two planets appeared extremely close that evening.
Adam Paulson from UglyChristmasSweaterParty.com is on to talk about ugly sweaters that you can buy, and he's just as surprised at their success as anybody.
Yeah, we're very surprised. 4 weeks ago, Kevin and I ran out to buy a few sweaters. We probably came home with about 40 of them, laid them down on the floor, and we were staring at them, wondering if we just spent the money for nothing, wondering how quickly they sell. We threw them up, and I think our first sell was in like 10 minutes of us putting it up, and we've probably sold 500 to 700 in the past 4 weeks.
Stuart Nellman with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nellman with an unscripted review of the history of the Second City and other books that dealt with this legendary comedy troupe. That's what's coming up on Book Banter.
And Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
Good sports programming on TV. Folks, it just ain't in the cards. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade. It's coming up later on The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
The guests later on this edition of The Stuff File program, the person who told you this was show number 0017, is Jeremy Lacey, Executive Vice President of Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStationUSA.com. Yes, the very CyberStationUSA.com that this show, The Stuff File program, can be heard on. Check out their website, CyberStationUSA.com. Thank you very much, Jeremy, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Also coming up, we do have an idiot of the day. That's much later on the show, but let's get to the stuff right here, right now. And you know, we are in the holiday season, and on this program, not just during the holiday season, but throughout the course of the year, we have several stories that deal with the sightings of the Lord, you know, the Virgin Mary or Jesus Christ or God somehow shows up in all kinds of apparitions that people talk about throughout the course of the year, but they tend to come, shall we say, more fast and furious at this holiday time. I don't know if it's just the way things work out or wishful thinking on people's part, but we have a couple of stories that deal with that. We start off with a story from Glendale, Arizona. Well, we have, as I said, another religious sighting. An Arizona woman said she was given peace and comfort from an unlikely source, a pancake bearing an image that she says resembles the Virgin Mary. Bianca Lopez said she was cooking batter blaster pancakes for her family a few days before Thanksgiving at their Glendale home, and she noticed the image of Jesus' mother looking back at her from the final pancake in the batch. I think it's God's way of telling us that the holidays aren't just about presents. It's about spending time with your family and friends and telling us to not forget about Him, that He's always there watching over us and taking care of us, Lopez said. Lopez said she is keeping the pancake safe in the freezer until she can decide what to do with it. Hello, eBay. Meanwhile, holy cow! Sterling, Connecticut's got a holy cow! Or should that be a divine bovine? It happened at Brad Davis's dairy farm. A calf was born with a white marking on its forehead, a mark that sure looks like a cross to anyone who's seen it. Davis thinks the markings may be a message from above, though he's still trying to figure out what that message might be. The mostly brown calf is half Jersey, half Holstein. Neighborhood children have called the cow Moses. Let my people go. Okay, elsewhere on the stuff file, here with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we go to New Zealand. Our friends in New Zealand who listen to us, by the way, on World FM, 88.5 FM on your dial. A German visitor was caught trying to leave New Zealand with 23 geckos and 20 skinks hidden in his underwear. Hans Kubis, age 58, was stopped at Christchurch Airport on Sunday a week ago after checking in and was searched by customs staff. A small package containing the reptiles was found in his underwear, prosecutor Mike Bodie told the Christchurch District Court. The package contained 8 separate compartments separating various gecko and skink species. Kubis's luggage also contained a single gecko in a rolled-up sock. A total of 24 geckos were found from 5 different species, as well as 20 skinks from 2 species. The German admitted trading geckos and taking geckos and skinks from the wild without a permit. A black market trade in geckos exists in Europe, and those taken by Kubis would have had a street value of around $50,000. The value of the skinks was unknown because trading in that species had not previously been identified. Kubis was due to be sentenced on January 25th. 23 geckos and 20 skinks hidden in his underwear. Go ahead, write your own joke. I'll just let that one slide by. Meanwhile, marathoner Jerry Johncock, who is 81, and could you imagine going 81 years with the name Jerry Johncock? Anyway, was 4/5 through the way of the Twin Cities Marathon in October when he was overtaken by a medical problem common to men of his age, urinary blockage. As he stopped to discuss his plight with officials, noting that he would have to quit the race to get to a hospital before his bladder burst, a spectator overheard the conversation and offered him the use of a spare catheter that he had in his car. What are the odds? Johncock repaired to a restroom, administered the catheter, and finished the race to the end. There you go. Have catheter, will travel, I guess. In Fort Pierce, Florida, 46-year-old Elena Lucia Barone had been pulled over for a traffic violation. When the officer asked for her license and registration, Elena inexplicably suddenly lifted her blouse, revealing her breasts. When the officer asked why she did it, she said, "I thought that's what you wanted to see." Well, it wasn't, and the officer arrested her and charged her with indecent exposure. Okay, under the headline of news that sounds like a joke, as if that last story didn't, in August, the Thorpe Park Amusement Facility in Chertsey, England, posted signs on its roller coaster admonishing riders not to wave their arms during the ride. According to director Mike Vallis, "We found that when the temperature tops 77 degrees Fahrenheit, the level of unpleasant underarm smells can become unacceptable, and we do receive complaints." No, really, I'm not making this up. This was a story. It really happened. Chertsey, England. Moving right along, in Southwest Ranches, Florida, Rob Falk must really love his pig. Town officials ordered him to get rid of his 300-pound Yorkshire pet pig named Strawberry, but Falk says he'd rather leave town than give up the animal. City council members cited Falk's landlord for a code violation back in July. Well, last week, officials gave Falk 30 days to remove Strawberry from the home, saying that the town allows only one Vietnamese pot-bellied pig per household. Officials were also worried that the pig will get bigger. They tend to do that, you know, and grow large tusks. Falk says his family will move because the pig is like one of our children. Which, when you think about it, kind of says something about his children, don't you think? Yeah. Anyway, finally in the Stuff File program for this segment of the show, we go to Fairfield, Alabama. Fairfield police say a Mississippi man took holiday shopping to another level by hiding in a Walmart and trying to leave with cash. Police said the man hid inside the Walmart on November 25th after it closed at 11 p.m. and took $54,000 in cash and checks. A guard subdued the man when he tried to leave through locked doors. Police said money bags started falling from his clothes as he shook the doors. Officers found money strapped to the man's chest, in his backpack, and in his pants. But in this case, no geckos. They confiscated a key used to enter the cash room, but hadn't said if he had an accomplice. Chief Pat Martis said the man could have escaped if he waited 20 more minutes for employees to unlock the doors, but he got nervous. The 35-year-old was in the Jefferson County Jail on robbery and burglary charges with a $60,000 bond. Well, you know, when it comes to the holiday period, some people like to give gifts, and as you just heard, some people like to take. Some people just can't stop taking. They don't understand the gift of giving. But the gift of giving goes back, well, to biblical times. When we think of holiday season, we do think of giving gifts, just like in the Bible when the three wise men traveled to bring gifts to the baby Jesus. Now, of course, Christians all learned about that perpetual nightlight in the sky known as the Star of Bethlehem. Well, joining us right now on the program via the wonderful world of Skype is someone who does regular features on the Stuff File, but I thought we'd invite him for a longer segment on the program to talk about the biblical nightlight. Of course, I'm talking about Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy who is with us. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter.
Thanks for being on with us, and happy holidays to you, by the way.
For you, too, and all your listeners.
So let's talk about the Star of Bethlehem, and exactly what is it?
Well, that's a good question. You know, this is really has become a big mystery, a celestial mystery. You know, the public at large, you know, when the holiday season comes around, it's something that people do think about. You know, you see, you know, TV shows about it, you know, Christmas specials that wonder. But, you know, it also intrigues astronomers, actually. And the astronomers themselves have been really debating, you know, the identity of the Star of Bethlehem for centuries. You know, did a star actually exist? Was there actually a celestial event that happened? And, you know, actually there are many, you know, possible suspects that that they've come up with over the you know, the centuries. One maybe it was a comet. Could it have been a meteor shower, or maybe even an exploding star, like a supernova of some sort? These have all been, you know, proposed over the years. But in the last just maybe decade or so, there's been some really more detective work happening, and two main theories have sort of bubbled up to the surface, and that are really dominating the discussion and the debate amongst astronomers.
So what are the theories that are currently out there in the last 10 years?
Yeah, well, the big one, like I mentioned, there were all these comets and exploding stars, but the two big ones, one is that it may relate to actually the Star of Bethlehem to a singular sort of gathering, a congregation of planets. Now, to a stargazer, when you look up in the sky, you see all these points of light, but there are actually five points of light, five star-like objects in the sky that we can see today as were visible centuries ago or even millennia ago by ancient astronomers that we now know are planets. They're actually other worlds like the Earth. And sometimes two of these star-like planets that we see in the sky come very close. They actually have a close encounter. And astronomers call this a conjunction. And the two very brightest ones that you can see with the naked eye, without any optical aid, no telescope or binoculars, would be Venus and Jupiter. And it turns out, using computer models that we have today, we can actually reconstruct what the night sky looked like on any date in any time in history. And it seems like there was a very, very strikingly close conjunction, pairing of Venus and Jupiter on June 17th, 2 BC. So this is a strong candidate for the Christmas star, many astronomers are saying, because these two planets appeared extremely close that evening. And in fact, according to the latest calculations, they may have appeared to almost merge with the unaided eye. So if you were at that point in 2 BC on June 17, looking towards the western evening sky, especially if you're in the Middle East, you would have seen a singular, bright, very bright star. If we had a telescope with you at the time, or even a pair of binoculars, you would have been able to separate that light into two separate lights, one being Venus and the other being Jupiter.
Based on these calculations that you're talking about, how often of an occurrence would this be?
Well, you know, conjunctions happen, you know, a few times every year that can be seen around the world in any southern hemisphere or northern hemisphere. So they're not particularly rare. Sometimes the ones that are extremely close, like this one, where they appear to almost merge to the naked eye, are truly rare. They happen only once, maybe a century or so. So definitely, it makes it a very good candidate. I mean, there's no doubt that for ancient sky watchers at the time, it looked like a massive singular star-like object. But you know, the questions, you know, there's still lingering questions about this date. I mean, is this really connected to Jesus's birth? I mean, there's a lot of ambiguity about the exact date of the birth of Christ, and there's no real written record that we've found that establishes authoritatively when that birth may have happened, if he was a real person.
So, if you're talking about this convergence of planets to form what we know as the Star of Bethlehem, then that means, I'm guessing, that unlike other things we talk about in the nighttime sky, this occurrence is not something that is necessarily confined to one particular hemisphere.
Right. I mean, this would have been seen, you know, throughout the world, basically. It would have been a worldwide event, and conjunctions can be, even today when we have one, you can see them worldwide. So this makes it something that, you know, you'd think that there'd be other records of this particular event, some historical record in other locations, but we haven't found anything yet. And this is why there's some of these questions that linger about this as well, is that maybe this isn't quite the one. And so there is an alternative theory.
And what's
There is,
that?
yeah, this other alternative theory is interesting because it involves more of a knowledge about the cultural aspect, the significance to stars, to cultures at the time.
Right.
And to anyone that, you know, like astronomers who actually study the historical aspects of the science, they see this Christmas star story as being much more elaborate. And what I mean by that there may be a mistake in that a lot of astronomers today are looking for this one spectacular event in the sky that, you know, today's telescope and technologies are real, and you know, computer technology, we can locate these, we can pinpoint them. But they may be missing completely the cultural impact and the importance of the story itself, the story of the Star of Bethlehem itself. And there is this alternative theory that says that there may have been a series, a complex series of celestial alignments. And this would have happened between the moon, Jupiter, and maybe a particular constellation. So you know, it can be something much more elaborate. And there is actually one sequence of events that we have pinpointed that happened started happening in April of 6 BC. It started with basically Jupiter positioning itself in the constellation Aries, and over the following months, Jupiter was had a close encounter twice with the Earth's moon, and then even paired up with Saturn. And this all happened within the course of a few months. And now you say, well, why is that significant? And that's because the constellation Aries, we know from history, was considered the sign of the Jews. And Jupiter's movements in sequence like this, like pairing up with the moon, Earth's moon, and then with Saturn, another very bright star-like object in the sky at the time, carried a very meaningful relationship to it. I mean, this they felt at the time, the astrologers at the time felt that this conferred kingship. So there might have been some kind of huge event happening with their royalty at the time in the Middle East.
So with this second theory you're talking about, this brings back to the opposite side of what I was saying earlier. If it involves a constellation, then it's something that's only seen in one particular hemisphere. Would that be correct?
Well, it could be. It could very
Yeah.
well be something that not all of these events in sequence would have been seen around the world, only if you were in the right place at the right time.
Right.
And so possibly, you know, in the Middle East, we know from looking back through our computer models, we're able to tell that this what events happened in the sky. And there was this series. And just in the course of a few months, from April of 6 BC over the course of the spring of that year, there was all this series of events. And put together, you know, taken together, these events must have held a significant importance. And it just takes basically a look at the historical, the cultural aspects of society at the time in the Middle East to have an understanding of that. And that brings to light this second theory in a different way, in that we're looking at a series of events, not just one spectacular bright star.
So,
and knowing the culture at the time, this was really looked upon as something very special.
So we have very credible theories to what might be the star of Bethlehem, but it still remains, for the most part, a bit of a mystery.
It sure does. But you know what's interesting? That today's planetarium programs, if you go to see the Star of Magi during the holiday season, many planetariums have now chosen to show this alternate theory as being the prime candidate. But we won't know anything more than this unless there's some new evidence showing when the birth of Christ actually happened. Until then, it will remain a mystery.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program with us, Andrew. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is thenightskyguy.com.
That's right. I've got daily stargazing news right there for everyone to, and I invite everyone to actually send me their questions too if they have anything about the night sky.
Excellent. Andrew Vizekas, the Night Sky Guy, here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, here online everywhere, including cyberstationusa.com and World FM 88.5 FM in New Zealand.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet a man who will sell you an ugly sweater for Christmas. Plus, another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. There's Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And, of course, an idiot of the day. But right now, more stuff right here, right now. We go to China. In China, the driver of a semi-tractor trailer rig was pulled over after driving for hundreds of miles with a sheet of cardboard completely covering his broken front windshield. The driver, identified only as Mr. Lee, well, gee, that narrows it down, drove by sticking his head out the side window in freezing conditions or by peering through tiny holes in the cardboard. When stopped by police, Mr. Lee jumped down from the cab with a face that was purple from the cold. He told officers that he had been in an accident several days earlier, but did not have time to repair his truck properly because of his tight delivery schedule. He admitted to police that he had driven with the temporary cardboard windscreen for an incredible 400 miles. He said, "I would drive like that until my neck got too sore and numb, when I would then drive by looking through the little holes in the cardboard." Not the brightest bulb on the program, but certainly not the idiot of the day. That comes later. We go to Germany for our next story. A couple of train buffs are now facing jail time after building their own locomotive and then taking it out for a spin on a public rail line. The six-seated train was made out of garden furniture and salvaged train parts, powered by an electric motor, and even had its own refreshments car in the shape of a crate of beer. Residents spotted the unorthodox vehicle and called police, who had to call in a helicopter to finally locate the rig. The regular train lines had to suspend all services to avoid a collision, although the train buffs had at least chosen to have their drive when there had been no trains scheduled. The men who were arrested on the unauthorized vehicle are currently facing public safety charges. And now it's time to check the courts. Just recently in Boston, the three little bears hauled Goldilocks into court and charged her with breaking and entering, as well as vandalism charges. A group of 60 Girl Scouts of Eastern Massachusetts acted as the jury in a mock trial at Northeastern University Law School. Lawyers from the Massachusetts Bar Association sat in as judge, prosecutor, and defense attorney for the trial. The event was dubbed Innocent or Guilty, Commonwealth versus Gold E. Locks. And it wasn't her day. Goldilocks was found guilty on all counts, and the court even determined that she wasn't even a natural blonde. Ooh, snap. And finally, Santa Baby is one thing, but Santa David? In Big Springs, Texas, homeowner Barry McBee said he was just trying to be funny with his front lawn Christmas display. He adorned a 5-foot replica of Michelangelo's David with a Santa hat and beard, but other parents in the hood were not happy about it at all and started calling police after their kids started asking why Santa was naked. But they soon found that they were out of luck, as the display does not violate town ordinations of any kind, and being that it is a copy of one of the world's most well-known statues, does not involve any obscenity issues as well. But police then left McBee a voicemail simply requesting that he put some more clothes on Santa David. He finally caved in and put a pair of black and white faux velvet shorts with a Christmas bow on the statue. Ain't that nice? And while we're talking about Christmas clothing, when it comes to festive Christmas sweaters, the uglier the better. Just ask Adam Paulson and Kevin Wool from UglyChristmasSweaterParty.com, a company that sells unbelievably ugly Christmas sweaters for trendy theme parties. Adam Paulson is on the line with us right now from Indiana. Hi, Adam. How are you?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Absolutely.
I think we've all seen these very, very ugly sweaters. So the question right off the bat I have to ask is, why?
Why? Well, because it's fun. People enjoy finding the ugliest sweater possible, going out, having a good time with their friends.
How did this all start with you and Kevin?
Actually, there's a third partner with us. His name's Brian Miller, and he started the website about 2 years ago. We were going to a lot of ugly Christmas sweater parties around, and it was his idea to actually start a website, and the website started off just as a blog. And he was blogging about different party ideas and, you know, throwing up pictures of his favorite sweaters out there. Me and Kevin came along and, you know, decided, hey, maybe we should try to sell some sweaters on there. And that was about 4 weeks ago we started selling sweaters, and it's taken off since then.
Well, I was about to ask. I've been to the site, and again, the site is UglyChristmasSweaterParty.com. You actually do sell sweaters on the site. Are you surprised at how popular they are? Because, I mean, let's be honest, they're ugly.
Yeah, we're very surprised. We, like I said, 4 weeks ago, Kevin and I ran out to buy a few sweaters. We probably came home with about 40 of them, laid them down on the floor, and we were staring at them wondering if we just spent some money for nothing, wondering how quickly they'd sell. We threw them up, and I think our first sell was in like 10 minutes of us putting it up, and we've probably sold 500 to 700 in the past 4 weeks.
So the companies that actually make these sweaters, are they aware of what you're doing, and do they take offense to the idea that you're calling their work ugly?
You know what? I'm not sure if they know. That's a great idea. I have a feeling a lot of the companies that made these aren't around anymore. Some of these are pretty old. No one's reached out to us and let us know that we call them ugly.
Well, where are you getting them from?
We travel to a lot of thrift stores, resale shops, garage sales. We have a lot of our friends that have been getting them for us in different cities and sending them to us.
Now, do you yourself own a series of ugly sweaters? And again, I've seen the website, and people should check it out, UglyChristmasSweaterParty.com, and you can see what we're talking about. There are some hideous sweaters on this site. Do you personally have any of these?
Oh, yeah. We personally, we have a good amount. The thing is, we keep, as we run out, because we're running out because people are buying them so quickly, we are throwing you know, our favorite ones that we like up there, unfortunately, and it's kind of actually painful to watch people buy them.
Where are the buyers coming from? Is it a regional thing? Is it across the country? Is it beyond the United States?
It is beyond the United States. We were surprised. Some of our first orders came from the troops in Afghanistan, Iraq. They are actually throwing ugly Christmas sweater parties out there. We've shipped to Iceland. Canada is a big customer. Right now, our website, unfortunately, Google Checkout, does not allow for international shipping. So what we're having people do is just email us their address, and we'll ship it out that way. But, yeah, we've had requests from Europe. They're calling them jumpers. So, yeah, all over the place.
Again, I encourage people to go to the website, which is uglychristmassweaterparty.com. But I'd like to know from your perspective, what design do you consider to be the most hideous? I know for me, it's the any of those sweaters that show that knitted sweaters that show reindeer on it drive me nuts. But what do you consider the hideous ones?
The most hideous are the ones with the big sequins. It has the faux fur on it. And the more stuff they jam-pack on these sweaters, the worse they look, that's for sure.
Sounds like something from the Liberace collection.
Oh, it is. It's straight out of it. These are just hideous.
When you're not doing this, I mean, you only started this 4 weeks ago, you and your two buddies, what do you do for a living besides this website?
I'm actually a financial advisor. Kevin is a program director with the Boys and Girls Club. And Brian is a sales executive for a large company here in Chicago. Mm.
Being a financial planner, do you find there's futures in hideous Christmas sweaters?
You know what? It's starting to look that way.
Well,
I wouldn't have thought so at first, but from the response we've gotten, you know, there very well could be.
What are the range of prices for the sweaters that are on your site, by the way?
Depending on how ugly they are or if they're a sweater or a turtleneck, between $20 and $25.
And who exactly rates the sweaters on the ugliness factor?
We take pride in doing that ourselves.
You're not wearing one right now, are you?
I am not.
Oh, okay. I just want to check.
I am not.
Again, people can check out the website, which is www.uglychristmassweaterparty.com, and you can go there and actually order these sweaters. I thank you very, very much, Adam, for taking time to be on the program with us.
I thank you for having us.
Adam Paulson from uglychristmassweaterparty.com. You can find the link by going to my website, thestufffile.com. Just click on the What's On page for this corresponding show number, which in this case is 0017, and you'll find all the information. Again, my website is thestufffile.com. You're listening to the Stuff File program online in many locations, including cyberstationusa.com and World FM 88.5 New Zealand. Time for book banter.
It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And this time around on Book Banter with Stuart Nullman, Stuart's here to share a laugh or two. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, Peter. Well, improvised laughter.
Improvised laughter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like we're making up as we go along right now.
Okay.
And, you know, when you're thinking of show business, you know, there are certain aspects of show business, whether it be TV shows, movies, record companies, singers, groups, that can be labeled as institutions. Now, one of them, if you're in the comedy world, that can apply to the small theater company that was founded by Bernard Salins in the former Chinese Laundry on Wells Street in Chicago in December of 1959. It was the type of comedy performed twice a day that leaned towards satire and improvisation. It was the Second City, which quickly became the place to go see the latest and hippest comedy around, and most importantly, transformed itself as a virtual training ground for some of the most important and influential comedians and comedy actors over the past five decades. I mean, look at the list of alumni. Joan Rivers, John Candy, John Belushi, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Martin Short, Gilda Radner, Steve Carell, Stephen Colbert, Tina Fey. I guess it goes on and on and on. Now, to commemorate the Second City's golden anniversary, a new book has been published that tells it its legendary up-and-down story and its impact in the world of comedy by the people who knew it best, the performers, producers, directors, and management. It's called Second City Unscripted, and Mike Thomas, who's a writer for the Chicago Sun-Times, conducted over 170 interviews with current and former cast members, as well as many of the behind-the-scenes people, to look at 50 years of Second City, its triumphs and setbacks, the egos and personality clashes, and the stories behind the evolution of some of its best-known sketches and characters. For example, Chris Farley, who developed the Matt Foley character on Second City, basically, a lot of his cast members, his fellow cast members, knew that he was on the path of self-destruction that early in his career.
Wow.
Prophetic, actually. Also, you like SCTV?
Yes.
Great show. Well, the second season of that show was taped in Edmonton, and a lot of their best characters and sketches were developed during that second season, and many of the cast members admitted that because there's not much doing in Edmonton between tapings, they just wrote and wrote and wrote some more, and that's how they developed all these great characters and sketches.
It says a lot about comedy, and it says a lot about Edmonton.
Yeah, or not very much.
Yeah.
Also goes to many of the characters, well, the cast members' eccentricities. George Wendt, who was a member of Second City in the late 70s, when he was in Chicago, he spent most of his spare time at his outdoor balcony barbecuing steaks, ribs, and other meat products, no matter what time of day, no matter what season, even during heavy snowstorms, he could be found grilling on his backyard barbecue.
And you find that odd? Why?
Well, Chicago, and it's like, minus 20 degrees and a heavy snowfall. I mean,
we live here in Montreal. We have more harsh winters than in Chicago. I barbecue year-round.
Oh, really?
What's your point, Stuart? Do you have an issue with that?
Well, if you're grilling steaks one cold winter's day and you have a couple of spare, I could come by and, he fed Jim Belushi very well during his days there, too.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
There is no grilling season. Just get that straight.
Okay.
There's no grilling season.
Or maybe George Wendt pioneered it. You don't know that.
Yeah.
Well, this book, Second City Unscripted, is a fascinating look behind the curtain and the Bentwood chairs, those famous Bentwood chairs that they use for their sketches, to how a theater group built on satire and improvisational comedy grew from a bohemian hangout to one of the most reverential institutions in show business history. So if you want to know why Saturday Night Live, The Office, or Curb Your Enthusiasm are such highly regarded hits, they owe it all to the Second City. So the book is The Second City Unscripted by Mike Thomas, published by Villard Books, and it's $32. And believe it or not, this institution has spawned about four other books.
Wow.
Since 1987, the first book was by Donna McCrohan, which was a very well-written history. Dave Thomas wrote a book on the history of SCTV.
Dave Thomas, the comedian, not Dave Thomas from Wendy's.
No. We're talking about, Bill Needle, that kind of.
Exactly.
Actually talk about how John Gielgud and Ralph Richardson made a surprise appearance on SCTV, and they weren't the best of, weren't nicest people.
Right.
Bernie Solins did a memoir called Days and Nights in the Second City. So you can read up more about it, too. So there you go.
There you go. And again, this current book is?
The Second City Unscripted by Mike Thomas. It's published by Villard Books, and it's $32.
And where can people read what you do, Stuart?
Well, you can read me every week in the West End Times, and also it's available online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
You're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
Surviving. It's been the last few days, last week or so, it's been very, 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 very cold.
Really?
Yeah, cold.
You know I'm in Canada, right?
Yeah. Okay, it's probably not as cold as what you experience, but it's cold for us.
Yeah.
I'm wearing layers here, man. I got a sweater, I have a couple of shirts. Man, I'm telling you, wuss. You look up wuss in the dictionary, my picture's there.
You know, it has to be below minus 10 Celsius for me to even consider buttoning my coat. So,
you're a brave man, but you'll die soon.
No, I'm not a brave man. I'm just a Canadian.
Oh, okay. That's right. You're hardy. I forgot.
Yeah. You were.
Yes, Canadians are hardy.
You were a Canadian once, too. Remember back then?
Yeah, I know. But you notice, being a wuss, I ran away.
Exactly. Anyway, sir.
Yes.
What do you have for us this week?
Oh, let's see. Dateline, Bellevue, Iowa.
Oh, that would be the Hawkeye State.
Yeah, my northern neighbor. 73-year-old Philip Matthews, whose logging truck is equipped with a tall boom arm to facilitate loading, forgot to lower the arm after finishing a job in Bellevue back in October. And when he returned to the highway, the boom proceeded to snap lines and utility poles that he passed for the next 12 miles until motorists finally got his attention. And here's the good news. He was not shocked. Because that can really cause a lot of damage.
12 miles.
Wow. Yeah, I know.
That must be some.
Yeah, I feel sorry for his assistant who was hanging on all that way. Okay, I'm kidding. There was no assistant. There should have been though.
Yeah, that must have been some good tunes on the radio to distract him that much.
Yeah, I'm thinking. You know, listening to my satellite radio, I'm sure I'd run into a couple of dead zones along the way.
There you go.
It happens.
Yeah, I know. I hear you.
Let's move on. Dateline, Bloomington, Illinois.
That would be the land of Lincoln.
Yes. He had a beard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Officials at an Illinois zoo said the facility's gift shops will soon be selling necklace pendants made from dried reindeer dung. No crap, I mean it. The Miller Park Zoo in Bloomington said the magical reindeer gem necklaces, which sell for $15 each, were inspired by tree ornaments made from the same substance that went on sale at the zoo last year. We kept hearing from people who were buying the ornaments, "Do you have any jewelry?" says Susie Oley, the spokeswoman for the Miller Park Zoological Society. She then added, "We thought we'd make them available for the big shopping day." Pretty good. Looking for Christmas gifts. Well, who among us has not received a lot of crap for Christmas?
Yeah.
And she says the zoo expects to make as much as $16,500 from sales of the ornaments and necklaces during this holiday shopping season. How about that, huh?
You know, the person who said it's the thought that counts?
Yeah.
They're a bald-faced liar.
Heck of a thought, huh?
Yeah.
Dateline, really? Charleston, West Virginia.
Well, that'll be the Mountaineer State.
Are we... West by God, Virginia?
Yes.
Matthew Harrison's mother had just purchased him and his wife a new dryer to match the couple's new washing machine. Or as they say in West Virginia, a washing machine. The Harrisons called the city and asked for their old washing machine to be hauled away, and they put it out on the curb as instructed. They then waited more than 3 weeks for the city crew to come and take it away. As luck would have it, the crew showed up the same day the Harrisons got their new dryer and brought it home.
I see where this is going.
You can see this one coming, can't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They had just unloaded the new dryer from the truck and put it on the curb right next to the old washer, then went looking for someone to help them carry the machine into the basement. Of course, that's the exact moment the city crew finally showed up and hauled both the old washer and the new dryer away. So when Matthew came home, the new dryer was nowhere to be found. The city is now considering reimbursing the Harrisons for a new dryer. I think that's nice.
That's nice, yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to haul away somebody's washer and dryer, or as they say in West by God, Virginia, a washer and a dryer.
Right.
Dateline, Woodward, Oklahoma.
Ah, the Sooner State.
Where the wind comes sweeping down the plains. Yes, police in Woodward went on an unexpected rabbit hunt after receiving a call about a suspicious person dressed in a rabbit suit and harassing some school kids at a local McDonald's restaurant. Reportedly, a man in a Mazda convertible dressed in a rabbit suit had allegedly been driving around the kids' school bus while it was parked at the McDonald's. They were able to track down the vehicle and discovered the driver was, in fact, wearing a pink bunny costume minus a mask. He wasn't arrested, as police officers had not seen him doing any of this harassment that he was accused to have done. But one police officer said he hadn't been drinking or anything. He was just acting goofy. Just a young person being silly. Of course it was. Anyway, the cop told him, "You need to act your age." Probably. Anyway, he added that when he learned that the guy had just recently moved to Woodward, he said, "We don't do that kind of stuff up here."
acting goofy, huh? Apparently not.
That's a whole different costume.
A dog, not
yeah.
a rabbit.
That's what I'm saying. It's a whole different costume.
It really is, yeah. Gosh.
Yeah.
Dateline, Hampton Roads, Virginia.
That'd be the Old Dominion.
Yeah, I used to live there.
Or for us Canadians, the old AMP, I guess, is another thing, too.
Why do more Canadians
shop at Dominion than at
any other store? Yeah. It's mainly because of the meat.
See, I knew I could drag the Canadian out of you sooner or later.
Yeah, I know. Memories of growing up.
Yeah.
And the true north strong and free.
There you go.
Anyway, in Hampton Roads, the problem with Dennis Malbone's big invention, anti-monkey butt powder, is that most people think it's for monkeys, but it's not. It's for human sweat, specifically humans with, well, sweaty butts. Dennis has a big sign advertising the powder on the roadside in front of his dad's feed and seed store in Virginia, and the product also has its own website, which claims it helps with sweat and the frictional skin irritation people experience when they ride horses for hours. Dennis explains, if your butt is so sore that you have to walk bow-legged like a monkey, hey, you have monkey butt. Now, while many buy the product as a gag gift, at least one customer is a true believer. The owner of a construction company buys it for all his roofers. Another person said monkey butt powder was a godsend for her 14-year-old son, who chafes really bad. Why a mother would know that her 14-year-old son chafes really bad is beyond me, but I digress. Anyway, she said it's because the kid wears those tight pants for skateboarding. If you must, check it out at antimonkeybutt.com.
By the way, you know, monkey butt, that term is, which you described is also the same term they used to describe the people who ride scooters a lot in Vietnam.
I know.
In Vietnam. They also call it monkey butt there, too.
So monkey butt.
That would make people mad if you had to deal with that on a regular basis. It'd be irritating and upsetting, I would assume.
Well, I'm irritated and upset right now just thinking about having monkey butt, which I'm sure is very similar to jock itch.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, when I get angry, you know what I do?
I do.
I take keyboard in hand and write a 2-minute tirade.
Mm-hmm.
And well, Peter, it is time for my 2-minute tirade. And this time I want to talk, well, how shall I put it? I want to shuffle the deck a little, so to speak. We're getting close to Christmas, and I really shouldn't be complaining, but I will, because that's the kind of guy I am. Anyone who listens to this portion of your show knows how big a football fan I am, and I follow all levels of college football and the pros, from the National Football League to the Canadian Football League. A short time ago, the Montreal Alouettes were playing the Saskatchewan Roughriders in the CFL's championship game, the Grey Cup. Being a championship game, I wanted to see it, and had hoped I might catch it on one of the many sports channels I have at my disposal on my 250-channel cable TV system. But no! Several of the channels were carrying college basketball, which is understandable as tournaments are being held this time of the year, but others were showing people playing poker. That's right, people playing cards on television. Now, I'm sorry for any of you whose lives are so empty that your entertainment involves watching someone else play cards. I mean, what's the matter? The chess channel was blacked out in your area? Seriously, while I respect anyone's viewing habits, I cannot for the life of me understand the desire to watch people play cards. I just don't get it. I understand that on a Sunday afternoon when the cable sports channels are competing with pro football on the broadcast networks, they want to put something on that might attract those who aren't necessarily interested in the NFL. But poker? Seriously, can you imagine calling friends and asking them to come over to have a few beers, chips, and burgers and watch poker? I hope there wouldn't be a full house for anything like that.
The preceding segment brought to you by NBC's Poker After Dark.
Poker after dark. Toss your chips now, guys.
I actually watch poker on television, but there you go.
Peter, you call me a wuss, I call you a loser. So there. You know I love you, but you're a loser. So there.
Okay. Well,
I can't help myself.
Even though you've called me a loser, I'll let people know that they can still find you at www.missourinet.com. That's www.missourinet.com.
That's right.
And before I let you go, say those three magic words.
Hit the theme!
This is the Stuff File.
And we have time for a few more Stuff File stories, including the idiot of the day before we wrap things up. We start off with a story from London. Britons are among the ugliest people in the world. That's not what I'm saying. That's according to a dating website that says it only allows beautiful people to join. Fewer than 1 in 8 British men and just 3 in 20 women who have applied for beautifulpeople.com have been accepted, an email statement from the website showed. Existing members of the elite dating site rate how attractive potential members are over a 48-hour period after applicants upload a recent photo and personal profile. Swedish men have proved the most successful, with 65% being accepted, while Norwegian women are considered the most beautiful, with 76% accepted, the website said. I wonder if Tiger Woods would agree with that right now. Anyway, the way that beautifulpeople.com accepts new members is simple. A potential member applies with a photo and a brief profile. Over 48 hours, existing members of the opposite sex vote whether or not to admit them. Options are yes, definitely, yes, okay, no, not really, and no, definitely not. The site was founded in 2002 in Denmark and went live across the globe last month. Now, since then, the site has rejected nearly 1.8 million people from 190 different countries, admitting just 360,000 new members. I would say Britain is stumbling because they don't spend as much time polishing up their appearance and they are letting themselves down on physical fitness. That's according to Beautiful People Managing Director Greg Hodge. Next to Brazilian and Scandinavian beauties, British people just aren't as toned or glamorous. Only the male Russian and Polish applicants fared worse than British men. Although Russian women had a 44% acceptance rate, Polish women did not appear in the table at all. German applicants were slated for offering up unflattering photographs, which may have hindered their acceptance rates at 15% for men and 13% for women, the lowest rate in their category. German men and women aren't faring well, but they are submitting stern images. They need to soften up, Hodge said. Well, you know what they say, beauty's only skin deep, but ugly goes right down to the bone. Meanwhile, a Florida teenager has been charged with assaulting his father, reportedly because the man was snoring too loudly. The Pinellas County Sheriff's Office reported that the teen, who was 18, first threw a magazine at his father, who was sleeping on the living room couch. When that didn't work, deputies said the teen pushed the father to the floor and punched him in the face. The father was checked out by a nearby hospital. As a precaution, the teen was arrested and charged with domestic battery. He was released from jail. You know, I have a brother-in-law who snores, and one day we actually recorded him snoring and then played it back next to his head, just at the same level he was snoring at. Startled the dickens out of him. Yeah, we're kind of cruel that way in our family. But anyway, time for an idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Okay, this is just a classic moron. The mayor of Arlington, Tennessee, Russell Wiseman, is getting weird on us. In a Facebook post, Mayor Wiseman said that President Barack Obama's recent speech on the war in Afghanistan was deliberately timed to block the Christian message of the Peanuts television Christmas special. He also declared Obama to be a Muslim. Only people on Wiseman's friends list had access to the post, but he has more than 1,600 friends on Facebook, so the word did kinda get out. The post read, "Okay, so this is total crap. We sit the kids down to watch the Charlie Brown Christmas special, and our Muslim president is there. What a load of..." And then it's dot, dot, dot. "Try to convince me that this wasn't done on purpose. Ask the man if he believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and he will give you a 10-minute dissertation about it when the answer should simply be yes." And by the way, the mayor misspelled the word dissertation. In Wiseman's extensive thread that attacked the president, his supporters, and Muslims, he stated, "You Obama people need to move to a Muslim country. Oh wait, that's America. Pitiful." When contacted, Wiseman declined to comment about his Facebook posts. Well, I'll say it. Mayor Russell Wiseman of Arlington, Tennessee, you're an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of The Stuff File. Join us next week when we have a very special program. That will be our Christmas show. It's a Meshach and Malik Christmas special. My two little young nephews did the show. It's a children's show that's not necessarily for kids. Well, it is, but not in a traditional sense. Enjoy. The website is thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding number for this program, which is 0017. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and at Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. We hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mama jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.